Steve and Jill here.
Hello. With
guest Justin Sliva, just because it's Friday. Welcome to the Land Academy Show, entertaining land investment talk. I'm Stephen Jack Butella.
And I'm Jill DeWitt, broadcasting from sunny Southern California.
Like I just said, today, Jill and I talk with guest Justin Sliva, because it's Friday,
yep,
about the transactions we're doing and anything else, quite frankly, that we'd like to talk about.
Because we all have so much free time. So much free time.
Yeah.
Change the time on you, Justin. Thanks for being flexible.
Yeah. Hey, oh, yeah. No problem. It's throwing me off. I'm already off this week on days of the week. And so this one just made me all kind of confused. I don't know quite where I'm at right now. So
I understand.
Hey, so before we actually get into the whole show, how's your ebook doing and consulting and what's going on?
The ebook's doing good still, between 5 and 7 sales a day. I mean, I didn't expect a huge thing, but 5 to 7 sales a day that you keep generating. It's been consistent across all the platforms at that. And, you know, it's something nice to see that just, somebody else got helped by this. So land business is going good. We just locked up a piece of property in Maine that touches the Canadian border, which I think is really cool. So you have 66 acres that like back up to Canada, which to me is really neat. And I don't know why, I just find it really cool. So we're in it for, I think, $16,000. So.
Oh, that's cheap. Jeez.
Yeah.
That's
great. Yeah. So it's
years ago, I bought a ranch that was adjacent to Mexico.
And okay, cool.
It struck me the same way. Like I had to buy it. It probably wasn't the best deal I've ever done. It wasn't the best deal, but it was adjacent to Mexico, so I had to do it.
Yeah. I'm thinking that, you know, as all the people that talk about wanting to move to Canada when different electoral people, I'm like, oh, I can make it like a toll bridge right to Canada. They could camp on our side, then move across if they want.
Exactly. So,
you know, they probably could just walk across from where it is. Right?
Yeah. No, they could. They could. It's
rattle the line.
Yep. Yeah, that's all I need is somebody to get arrested for like illegal entry. So,
yeah.
But everything else is going pretty good. Yeah, no complaints.
Good. All right, awesome. How's it going with you, Joe?
Great.
Is it a good transaction week?
Yeah, I'm great. Yeah, I had some really good deals that I know I'll talk to in a minute that came in this week. I'm really excited.
Nice.
Awesome. So cool.
All right, before we get into the show, let's take a question posted by one of our land investors members online in our community. It's free.
Mark says, it seems my second mailer is somehow producing more response. Actually, I get a lot of nice FU mailbox messages, but also a lot of hangups. So now I'm wondering, how do you folks handle these calls? Do you call back the people who just hang up? Even call some angry ones back and try to convert to potential buyers? Or is it just not worth the effort? I mean, I guess a call back. I guess if I call back, I get a lot of nice FUs direct in the face. Just wondering, nothing good came back yet.
So I have to say before you guys answer this that there were probably 20 responses in landinvestors.com.
I'm sure.
A tremendous amount of people saying, and the vast majority are exactly probably what you guys are going to say. Just laugh at it.
Yeah.
Roll it off. You know. But I wondered, though, between both of you, do you call people back that actively say... Oh,
especially the hang-ups. Absolutely. If you got a missed call, I absolutely call them back. And I just pretend like, hey, I just sent out some offers the other day, and I'm wondering if you got an offer for me to buy your property. And, oh, yes. As a matter of fact, I did. So, and they could be mad or they could be happy. You don't know until you get in there. And they could say, yeah, I want to talk to you about that. Like, you know, all right. When you're calling them and they're not expecting the call back too, they don't have time to get heated. So it's actually, I find those easier. But the other ones that they say, if they're adamant and they leave a message like Pat Live or, you know, through us, you know, take me off your lifts, jump in a lake. You don't call them back.
Yeah. How about just caller ID?
Yeah, I call them back.
Just if it's on the caller ID with no message.
Yep, call them back.
That's what I think too.
Because some little old lady who got freaked out, I always think of it this way because it's often true. She got freaked out by the voicemail and she didn't know if she dialed her or just not comfortable leaving a message or something. I call them back. What about you, Justin?
I won't call if they hang up on Pat Live. I won't call them back. If they leave a message with Pat Live, I will call them back. If they hang up on my office or my Google Voice number that goes to, you know, the office number, I will call those back because those numbers are all everywhere. So they can see that. I will call those people back. But for the most part, if they tell me F you or send me a nice little love letter, I got one today. It was a new one. It had a booger on it. They folded it up, circled all over the thing, told me they're not going to do it, and smeared a booger across it and put it in an envelope and sent it to me. That was a new one for me today.
Not had that one.
Yeah, I told y'all a couple weeks ago we sent out a bunch of mail. We've got more mail going out at the end of the week this week. And so I expected some more hate, but we had a one this week that told us to take the letter, cut it in half, or take the letter, have fun with our lower half, and then they could or I could make love to it and use the F word and a little bit different. So they wrote personal confidential on a return address, but had my contract and everything with their personal information on it anyways inside the thing. So it was fun week so far with that sort of stuff. So, but yeah, you laugh about it. It does, for me, it bothers me because I'm like, hey, why so mad, you know? And I want to figure out that reason, but you just got to laugh about it and move forward.
Yeah. There are those people I've just determined over the years, you know, that's the thing. It's like I really think that those people are the same people that call up when they get an excessive amount of credit card offers, and they probably, you know, they get mad over, you know, the little things at the post office or in traffic. I just think that's those people. So yeah. I don't even, you know, if they're that mad, that sucks to be you.
Yeah. I just think that, you know, it taps into a deeper issue of just this whole, like, taking things so personally.
Yeah.
Like, we've all been in a car as a passenger when people, like, the driver goes nuts about some stuff that other people are driving, and it just, they take it personally.
Yep.
I don't know. I guess I don't take anything personally. I just don't get upset about this stuff. I don't know why. I just think it's really, truly, honestly a source of humor. The first time it happened in the 90s when I was sending these offers out, I thought it was funny then, and I think it's funny now.
Me too. I do find those things so comical that in the big picture, why does this make you so mad?
Yes.
All you say is no thank you. It's the same as when I get mail. I don't want your credit card, and I don't need a pizza tonight. I just throw it away.
It's the same kind of thing, like, you know, when girls get all dressed up and then go out, and then guys walk up and say, wow, you look great, and they get all shit in there. You know,
what?
They get all mad.
I understand exactly what he's saying, but I'm not going there because
I know where that one's going.
You just got all dressed up with your friends to attract a bunch of attention.
Right.
Now we're giving you the attention, and you're going to reject it.
Oh, that's wrong.
It's the same thing. Oh. It's the same problem. It's the same, like, personal, you know, it's the same. I think it's the same thing.
I get it. I
don't you think, Justin?
But the reason they say is because I'm looking good for me, not for you.
You put 3 hours into this for yourself?
You spent $90 on that hair, nails, for what?
Exactly. Yeah. I don't care if you like it or not. I did it for me. Yeah, that's true. Yep. No, it's not.
That's actually a new one, dude. And I've never heard that. That's new.
It's peacocking for self-confidence.
That's right. That's great. That's good.
You're going to be walking around Hermosa Beach, 10. Hey, that girl's peacocking over there. I can see it now.
Yeah. Oh, we see a lot of it. I'll tell you. Sure, oh, man.
Yeah.
Boy, it's worse. Our peacocking is put some clothes on, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that does not count as a bathing suit.
That's true. It's like summertime now. It's not yet summertime, but it's spring break, actually.
We've had spring break right now. We've had a few good, like, on Sunday. It was, oh, boy. I mean, we were, like, off. We had to get off the Strand. It was, like, so crowded. Yeah. It was ridiculous. Wow. It was so darn. And Pier Avenue was a crack up. Yeah. So it was good, though.
All right. So 66, back to real estate. 66 acres in Maine.
Yep.
What do you think you sell it for?
Probably it's about 55,000. We're in it for 16. So it's not a home run, but a solid deal. It's got access. It's got an easement access. It has dirt road that's maintained, and it's all recorded since the early 80s where everybody's maintaining. It's got power lines that run across. So it's got power to it. It's zoned residential. So, and there's houses being built around it. So it's kind of cool. It's just a neat little property. It's got a little bit of water on it. It's got a bunch of trees and some of the meadow area. So
awesome.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good one. We got five back in Oregon that we've okayed. We're waiting to finalize terms on. Those look good with, those are plum deals. We're funding those and they look good. I think we're going to be all in on that package. 30,000, total value about 95. So not a bad deal there. Had some properties sell this week. Florida and Georgia, we're getting those done. And we closed on a couple in Oklahoma. So
great.
Still moving around. Still looks pretty good. A couple little notes just kind of for those listeners that are listening. If you fund with us, and I know you feel the same way, talk to us if you're trying to do something that's a little bit out of your norm. Like if you have two properties wrapped into one and you think that since you're funding with us, you need to separate everything in the HUD and everything, let us know so we can walk you through it, because it makes a huge difference in your closing costs. And that's money straight out of all our pockets. Let us kind of help you. We had one that we looked at, and the numbers weren't adding up. And when we actually broke it down, I called the closing agent. I'm like, hey, these fees are way too high. What do we need to do here? She goes, we all have it split. And I was like, well, why are you splitting it? She goes, I don't know. And I was like, well, y'all requested it. And I was like, okay, well, we haven't signed anything. Can we change it? She goes, yeah, just let me know what you want to do. So I called her partner and find out. And he's like, oh, I just thought we need to keep the costs because we were funding it with you. We keep everything separate. I was like, well, we're going to probably sell them together. So the guy was just trying to do what he thought, right? But, you know, we switched it and it saved us $700. You know, that's a $15,000 deal. $700 is quite a bit, you know?
Yeah.
So it worked out, and we, you know, saved the money and we kept moving forward. So definitely a good one. Had a couple properties that we had cash offers on that we had up in the north that we funded it, say, at $4,600 for 2 1-acre properties. Guy made us a cash offer for both of them. They're adjacent, are the contiguous, and guy made us a cash offer for $8,500. And that's kind of, that's, you know, sometimes we miss them. You know, we've set on these properties for, we're at the 6-month mark. So it's like, okay, well, let's see if we can negotiate up a little bit, self-close, and try to save some of that. We've already sold some of the other properties. This was part of a package and we made some money on it, but it's just kind of, now it's like fight or flight, get out and just keep moving. So we don't always win. We don't always win.
Still made money though, right?
Yeah, we're still making money, but it's not a home run.
I'm having a great week. I mean, we're like, now we're hitting, you know, good rotation of in and out, you mm-hmm. know, and slowly growing. And I've got a couple, I got a Michigan one that came in last night that I'm not sure about. It's not in the best area, but I like Michigan, obviously, especially, you know, Upper Peninsula is pretty mm-hmm. looking at. I have Georgia. I've got two in Virginia. I've been doing really well in Virginia right now.
Nice.
And one partner in particular that we've been working with there, that they are finding some great properties that we can quickly, like, I'm looking at some, you know, in for 12, out for 35. I've got one right now in also in Oregon that in for about 40, will get out for about 100.
Nice.
I'm happy with that. Two this week, Colorado just sold like 2 days ago. And then I had another, I think it was a California. No, it was another Colorado. Two Colorados. That's what it was. So
we're finding our stride, uh-huh. finding some consistency to it. Yeah. And I'm sure like you were, there's the people that we were very like kinded minded with mm-hmm. are really sending us consistent deal flow now.
Right.
Yep. No. Yeah, we're seeing the same thing. We're getting some that this is our first couple deals, so it's kind of slowed us down trying to work through like technicolor or details that they're maybe missing in a purchase and sales agreement, or they don't look at if they're dealing, because we put everything on the MLS. We're only buying stuff that's got that quality to it. So they're dealing with realtors on the backside, and we've had that happen with negotiations going down with a realtor or missing something in the contract. And when it's brought to you, you're looking at it and you're okay, hey, this could cost us a potential extra $3,000. We need to know what this is and why that's there. And you know, having to catch that before we sign off on anything. So it's always fun, but yeah, you said you're finding your stride and you start finding the people that are bringing consistent deal flow.
Exactly. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. Okay. So what else are you working on? Anything fun?
I'm not ready to say yet. No, we've got a couple of things in the work. as you know, I'm always out there on the different spectrums of where I'm going to go or what we're going to do next. We've got a couple of things that we've got on a whiteboard, and I've got a couple things that we're going to try out on this week. So it'll be next week because we record a little early. So this week you'll see it come out probably towards the end of the week. And I'll be able to talk about it next week. And I just want to get a head start on everybody before this is actually brought out. So
awesome.
Cool. Yeah, it's really just manipulation of data. And that's where as you've always said, data real estate, your data company that buys real estate with that data. So we're going to manipulate the data a certain way and work on our inbound flow a little bit differently. So I'm good. Curious to see how it's going to work out. It's a little out there, but it's not too far out there to make it not work.
Cool. So.
Yeah, we're just neck deep in trying to get House Academy launched this month.
Okay, so you're thinking end of April still?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Because I want to come out to LA. I think I'm going to try to come out in May then, if you're going to be wrapped up with House Academy.
Good. Yeah, I mean, if my part will be done.
Okay.
But the content part will be done on time, but mm-hmm. it's just the tech part is very, very, very complicated because there's a whole additional component to these algorithms and getting the algorithms in. So
it's amazing.
And that one website, House Academy, is going to do basically like five websites do for Land Academy. So it's it's not beyond it's totally within our realm and our staff to handle it. Right. It's just we got to get it right.
Yep, yeah. I understand that.
So it's fun. It's fun working on. You know, it's fun pricing house mailers is it's a treat compared to some of the concepts of scatterbrain, rural vacant land.
Yeah,
it all works. It's just you know, it's really laser like. So
yeah, no, you're exactly right. And as you know, we've done that. The partner I worked on it with here, we were talking today about how he's got his master's degree in statistics. So when you talk about sample sizes and how to manipulate everything, we're running through our mailers of how we've priced in. He bounces it off me. Hey, you did it this way. Then I tweaked it this way. And now we're here and this is where we're at. Well, he decided, hey, well, I got this wild hair to take some of those algorithms and test it against how we actually comp it with the brokerage stuff that we can see on MLS. And went back through and actually found 0.5% variance from one of the algorithms that's out there versus, you know, what everything else was. And so broke it down by section of house and splitting it up. And so it was really, really cool to see that, you know, the pricing, we could actually do it a little bit quicker than sending it all out. But, you know, our VA time would be a lot less having them run, you know, some of the comps. So it was pretty neat to see. That's our market. And we know it changes when you throw in basements and things like that. So we're kind of manipulating that a little bit and just playing with it to see. But I think he told me he sent out another 20,000 mailers on houses here in Fort Worth or Dallas, Fort Worth area again. And so he's hammering them right now. And it's in the response, everybody else, he says he's showing up to look at these houses. And there's three other wholesalers that had business cards. So they take his blind offer, they shop the wholesalers with it, and then they all show up to inspect it.
That's the hard part. Then
you're fighting over $1,000. It's like, okay, I'll give 110. I'll give 112. I'll give 112.5.
It's silly. You don't want that. That's the last thing you want. You don't want them shopping them. You got to get in.
Get in and get closed. Exactly. So.
That's a bummer. And that can happen.
Yep.
Yeah.
Do you think it's Dallas specific or it happens everywhere?
I think it's Dallas specific because you have a hot wholesale. It's one of the last places that you can find these houses so cheap that you can come in 70% or 60%, 65%, make your $5,000 to $7,000 and then move on. And that's what a lot of these wholesalers try to do is they just set their base at $5,000 and move it up and just kind of daisy chain it, or they try to move it to a bigger fund buyer. And you have a lot of fund buyers coming in because the house prices are cheap enough that they're siloing their risk. So we're seeing that quite a bit around here right now.
Yeah, I mean, the markets are still really moving well here in California and Arizona. We're still getting consistent deal flow. Mm-hmm. So we run into the occasional, you know, BS problem, but it's all person specific. It's not because of a flooding of the market. So, I mean, have you seen anything strange like that? Mm-mm. I haven't either.
Yeah, we've had a couple.
I'm doing my parts for House Academy and the filming and the things that I did and going back and looking at the transactions and that we've done and the examples around. I felt great.
Yeah.
No, if anything, I'm like, shoot, God, we got to send out some more mail now. We don't have enough mail going out.
And yeah. I think Dallas, I mean, I don't know like you do, Justin, but I think Dallas and that central Texas market are probably undervalued anyway.
Oh, yeah.
It's just houses are so cheap there.
Yeah. The property taxes is what really plays into that is our property taxes are extremely high. So that adds quite a bit of money. Like, so my house payment and insurance altogether, you take the taxes out. My taxes are just as much as my house payment, you know, monthly. So it just throws a big, you know, a big change in what people think. They're like, oh, I can buy this. They come from, say, we had our neighbors came from Ohio. They moved down here and they're like, oh, I can buy this $500,000 home. Then they get their first year's tax bill because it was figured on they just built the house. So it was unimproved. Yeah. Then it went improved and their house payment doubled. And they're looking at it. It's like, our house payment doubled. What's going on? I was like, yeah, it's the property taxes. You don't pay a state income tax. You pay that.
Exactly.
So, you got to come from somewhere. That's right. I was just going to say the same thing.
That's true.
Yeah. So that kind of plays into it. One of the things we're seeing in our market is we have some fund buyers that are paying over like what we comp the house at. They're paying 4% and 5% over that and putting them in their renter portfolios. And they're just hoping to hold them and see a little bit of attrition and get out. So they're making their 8% to 10%. And that's really what drives a market down for us is that institutional money dumping on us and them overpaying and it saturates it for us.
Well, for some reason, and that institutional money is like doesn't happen on accident. They're choosing that market for some reason. They see it as undervalued.
Yep. No, you're exactly right. They see that you still have people moving here. So you know that your rent rates are going to be there. You're still going to pull it. And some of them are coming in and buying neighborhoods and buying brand new, like the brand new builds, buying 10 or 15 of them, putting them all together and doing that with that package and having these builders or developers just, hey, I'll pre-buy 20 of them from you. And then they sell them back out, you know, in 5 to 7 years.
It was really popular in Arizona in 2010.
Was it?
You would pre-buy 20% of what the developer's building. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and you had to be the one to sell it first, okay. Not the developer themselves. And you'd add 25% to the whole thing. Just overinflate the market.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
It's pretty high risk, but it's, you know, it's a new asset. So it's a whole different deal.
Yep. Yep.
Thank you.
Well, you've done it again. You spent another 15 minutes or so listening to the Land Academy show. Join us next time for another interesting episode.
And we answer your questions posted on our online community, landinvestors.com. It's free.
You are not alone in your real estate ambition. Anything else, Justin, before we go?
No.
Cool. All right, man. Good talking to you this week.
Good talking to you as well. Talk to y'all soon.
You got it. Take care.
Right, bye.